Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight we'll go back to time and seasons past, when 22 men graced the rugged fields of yesterday, fighting for one more first down, one more yard gain, one final score which would bring victory after 60 minutes of battle on the gridiron. Tonight, we'll explore the world of gridiron greats. Welcome to Gridiron Greats Football History and its Memorabilia on the Gridiron Greats Publishing and Broadcasting Network. In conjunction with Slick Enterprises, we're live from the Wallingford, Connecticut home of Gridiron Greats Magazine, and I'm Bob Slick, publisher and editor of Gridiron Greats Magazine, and I'll be your host for the show. Gridiron Greats is the only publication in America which focuses upon the history and memorabilia of the North American football game since its inception in 1869. We cover 150 plus years of football history and memorabilia. You can find us on the web at gridirongreatsmagazine.com. It is at this time I'd like to introduce my co-host. He is a senior contributing writer to Gridiron Greats Magazine, a football memorabilia historian, specializing in pre-World War II items, in particular Red Grange, and also Seattle Seahawk items in particular, Steve Largent. He hails from Portland, Oregon. Joe Squires, Joe! Welcome to the show.
Good afternoon, Captain. How are you, sir?
I'm very good. How are you, Joe?
Good. Very good. Looking forward to today's show.
We have a very, very interesting show coming up, and we are going to lead off with our initial question between the two of us to talk about for the next 10 minutes or so, and that is the concept of ethics in our hobby today, 2019,
yep.
June 13th, the date of this recording.
What did they used to say? Ripped from the headlines?
It's an issue.
Yeah, and it's a sad issue to our hobby. I mean, we've talked about a few of these on our show. Resealed wax, trimmed, colored, doctored cards. It just seems wherever there are hobby enthusiasts like you and I, there are bad guys looking to separate us from our money, betray us, our beloved hobby.
And, you know, I go back many years when graded cards first came out. And as we know, they have expanded into the hobby to almost being the only thing that the hobby really is concerned about today in 2019. Buying a graded set, getting a graded set on your tagline in the collectors, I don't even know how to describe it, but you are the number one collector with the number one graded set of all time.
Yep, your banner.
XYZ set,
yep.
So on and so forth. And I said many years ago when they first came out, hey, how do these people really become experts in grading? What is the criteria they use for grading? I'm going through my notes right now. And at the same time, what justifies the grade, since we've been pretty well serviced over the years with mint, near mint, excellent, very good,
yep,
good, fair, and poor. And again, being an old timer in the hobby, that's basically the way I've graded since grading in theory came into it, you know, came into effect the late 70s, early 80s. And,
absolutely,
you know, I appeal, so on and so forth. But why do I have to pay $1,000 more for a car just because it's in a encased in a slab of plastic and has a little sticker on it saying that it's a grade of 8, 9, 80, 90, whatever the case may be? Does it make sense to me?
Yeah, you know, and it's always been you and I have differed on that. I've always loved my graded cards for protection, you know, authenticity. But, you know, about 5-6 years ago, I kind of started moving away from graded cards and, you know, the registry and started really getting into more esoteric collectibles and rare items. You know, thank you, Andy Becker and John Spano. You know, mm-hmm, and I'm using quotations when I say thank you. So, air quotes. But it's, I'm picking up what you're putting down because, you know, if we are leaning, obviously we are leaning on our TPG, our third-party graders, to authenticate these, to give us their blessing that it is this grade, that these are authentic, that they've been unaltered, undoctored. And if the card doctors are outpacing the third-party graders, then it betrays our trust. The entire pyramid that our hobby's built on, where, you know, this is graded X, it starts to erode all of those confidences we have built up in our hobby. I mean, it really does. I mean, not even taking into play the amount of money it takes to grade these things, the amount of money people are paying for the difference between a 9 and a 10. And when you begin to realize how subjective the difference between a 9 and a 10 is, I mean, something can have a 9 on one day and then, you know, and then, you know, the grader, you know, gets laid the night before and suddenly it's a 10. So, I don't know.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, have you seen the video that PSA put out, you know, some odd years ago that, you know, told the story of how cards got graded and how they did it?
Correct. I did see it once. And, you know, again, I wasn't overly impressed with the whole operation because I'm saying to myself,
yeah,
you got thousands, I mean, literally hundreds of thousands of cards you need to grade. You really didn't tell me that somebody spends that much time, you know, trying to look at a grade of a card, especially if it's, let's say, a newer card or a common card, so on and so forth. And again, how much time are you spending with let's say a 1935 Chickle card of Newt Rocky,
yeah,
or whoever? It's just not making any sense to me. And as much as I got many hobbyists, many dealers have become exasperated with me trying to explain the concept, so on and so forth. And you know where I'm coming from. I just say to myself,
yeah,
this is bogus. It's garbage. It really is garbage. And now.
Yeah.
Now, all these years later, after, you know, the umpteenth crisis in the hobby with graded cards, now to me, I think it's really coming to a head right now because now you've really slighted some serious collectors. It's actually been, you know, researched and it's actually been seen that this is a major, major, major beyond belief crisis. And as such, what's the solution? Oh, we're going to buy back the cards. Everything will be fine, and we'll take them out of circulation. Well, really? You're going to take them out of circulation?
What about the cards nobody investigated, nobody found? I mean, and just to refresh our viewers, this PSA video that came out showed that graders are armed with nothing but a halogen light a halogen light, and I think they have a loop. I mean, they don't have a black light. They don't have correct me if I'm wrong. I don't even think they had a loop. I think they're looking at it with the naked eye and a halogen light.
Yeah,
if I remember correctly.
It's ridiculous.
And in the meantime, the card doctors are armed with laser trimmers and power erasing and, you know, recoloring and black lights. I mean, to quote the Untouchables, PSA is bringing a knife to a gunfight. I mean, they're just being outclassed and outgunned by these card doctors. It's no wonder. I mean, I've told this story 100 times on Gridiron. I stopped collecting my beloved 48 Leaf set because I just saw so many trimmed cards slipping by the goalie at PSA. It got to the point where it was devaluing my untrimmed cards, and my level of frustration just got to me. I stopped collecting. I stopped collecting that set. High grade.
I agree. Now, as anyone who knows me knows, the only graded cards I have in my collection are the Mayos, which are SGC graded. I don't have any in PSA slabs. And SGC, in my opinion, is every which way as far as their grading is concerned. I got 20s that look like 40s, and I got 20s that look like they should be, you know, negative numbers, for crying out loud. And, it really doesn't make a lot of sense to me how you could have this, you know, something as this, which there are not that many of them graded. I don't see how you could be that far off in your grades when you're you know, actually looking at this. And then I got a couple what they grade A as authentic, which means they somehow have been trimmed. But again, to me, I can't see them being trimmed. I think what happened to them is that over the years, they just either wore and initially 100 years ago, a kid cut them or whatever, and that was it. So it doesn't really make a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, I have a 1912 Thorpe postcard from the Stockholm Olympics that was graded and authentic because it was one of the only ones that had been graded. So they graded an authentic. You know, 6 years later, the population's about 40 or 50. I cracked it out, sent it in, and it came back at PSA 4. So they're obviously, you know, evolving as time goes on. I don't know if you remember the WeWag, the When It Was a Game scare that was, 10 years ago?
Right.
Somebody was opening up PSA cases, pulling out the PSA 8, putting in a slider PSA 6 or so, and then resealing it. And then taking that PSA 8, resubmitting it, and then selling it. So they're doubling up. During that, the FBI got involved. And Joe Orlando, the old president of PSA, had to be deposed. His deposition became public, obviously it's a federal case. I remember reading in his deposition how PSA graded things. It was pretty interesting. Reza, at the time, was the head grader. I believe he still is at PSA. And Orlando described the process as, you know, they have a software system that some cards, like if you send in an 88 Topps Common, one person looks at it. They spend less than 10 seconds looking at it. They assign a grade, a numerical grade in the computer, and then they send it off to get slabbed and graded. One person. And then there are some cards in their software that are deemed two people have to look at it. So that one person that looks at a card is called first base. If two people have to look at it, it's called second base. So there are cards that have to go to second base. Like, let's say a more valuable card, like a 77 top Steve Largent card comes in. Obviously it's such a highly sought after, highly valuable card that at least two graders have to look at it. So if one grader deems it to be an 8, and then it goes on to second base automatically, and if the other grader deems it an 8, it gets slabbed automatically because their opinion is the same. If the other grader's opinion differs, if second base differs from first base, let's say he enters a 9, then the software automatically kicks it to third base, which is another higher grader. If that grader looks at the same card and enters an 8 or a 9, if he agrees with either first or second base, whichever grade he agrees with, it gets slabbed. If he disagrees with either of those two, it goes to the head grader, which is Reza. So in their software, there are cards that automatically have to be looked at by three graders, third base. And those are your higher-end cards, your PSA 10 Steve Largent rookie cards, your you know, what should be your Chickles, your Nagurskis, your Tosis, your Wagners. You know, these cards should be looked at by three people. And there are some cards that automatically go three bases, and there are some cards that don't. And so, if, you know, if a PSA 10 Steve Largent rookie card comes in, it automatically goes to first base, second base, and then third base, Reza. If somebody comes in, if a Bart Starr rookie card comes in and first and second base graded a 9, it automatically goes to third base for review just to make sure. If a lot of these higher-end cards end up above a certain grade, it goes to third base automatically. And they're constantly altering the software to include things. I mean, you know, what used to be very, very uncommon and rare, you know, a 57 tops, you know, John Unitas is now pretty common. I'm sure it just has to hit second base. Now I'm sure a PSA 9 has to hit third base, you know. So, I mean, they're constantly evolving, but still you have three humans looking at something with subjectivity, with opinions, you know. If they had a bad day, if they're having a good day, et cetera. I mean, that's how it goes. No loops. Perhaps they have loops now. We've reached out to Joe. We've reached out to Steve, the current president of PSA, to come on the show, and he's considering it. But you know, hopefully, one of these days we get a representative from PSA or SGC on the show to talk about the process.
Right. Right, and to me, I think it needs to be explained much more clearly, and at the same time, I really feel that there should be a little better process in the whole situation than the 10-second look at a card.
Yeah.
And even theoretically, if you're spending that much time on the older cards, how can you not see that they're trimmed? How can you not see that they've been colored?
Yep.
You're not spending enough time on it, you know? So it's something that really needs to be addressed very, very quickly. And I really believe that it has to be addressed one way or the other, or we're not going to have, you know, in the long run, we're going to have plastic that is useless. It really is, you know, for lack of better terms. So it's going to be a very, very problematic for the hobby. So,
yeah,
I don't know. I really don't know. I'm not happy with the situation. I think it's really, really, really not a good situation. It's really testing the limits of our hobby with regards to, you know, legitimacy, ethics, so on and so forth. And, you know, and again, we're one of the few hobbies where you are trying to preserve history to a certain degree, and you are trying to, you know, study history at the same time. But in reality, what do we have? You know, it seems like the, you know, a sucker is born every day type of hobby more than anything else right now. Because, you know, spend $25,000 on a card, and it's worthless, you know. It just blows my mind. It really blows my mind.
Well,
so
last week I had dinner with Keith Weinhold. He used to be a high-end collector.
Oh, okay.
And he found out some things were trimmed, talked to Joe Orlando, didn't hear what he wanted to hear, sold every single card he owned. And our hobby can only take so many of those hits before our hobby stops existing, you know, is the sad reality. Did I lose you? Bob? No. I'm going to assume Bob accidentally disconnected while trying to bring Rich in.
Jerry, you still there?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Technical issues.
We're still, okay. All right. Anyways, we're now slabbing all sorts of other new things. The ticket stubs.
Did I lose you?
But anyways, going on with regards to the grading issue and the problems that it's presenting within our hobby, it's just not a good situation in any way, shape, or form. It is a problem. It's a problem. We're still waiting for our guests to come on. I'm hoping to get them on in a few minutes. While we're waiting, we'll continue to talk about a few other things here.
Yeah.
Off script.
No, I mean, I was going to say it. You know, I mean, there are people. I mean, think about it. If you're a young person in a hobby, or somebody who works their butt off to save up for a card that's your childhood idol, and you buy it, you know, if you spend $1,000, you know, on a Steve Largent, you know what I mean. If you spend $1,000 on a four-star rookie card, and then all of a sudden discover it's right in the middle of a list of cards that are is a submission from a notorious card doctor, where 40% of the cards submitted were rejected for trimmed. How can I turn the other cheek when it's already bloody bruised and torn? I mean, if you get a gut punch like that, when you're a youngster, in our hobby, it might be enough to, move you away from the hobby. I mean, sadly.
Exactly. And I think that's the real risk of what's going on, where what I think is being missed by a lot of people. You are presenting an issue which, because it's not being resolved, and because it's basically being, for lack of a better term, being ignored, I really believe that, it's a long-term issue, to say the least. All right, I believe our guest is here, and I'd like to introduce him to our audience. He is the editor and founder of Sports Collectors Daily, a broadcaster and writer for more than 30 years, and a collector for even longer than that. He's usually typing something somewhere, and I'd like to welcome to our show this evening, Mr. Rich Mueller. Rich, welcome to the show.
Hey, glad to be with you guys. Sorry I'm a little late. Got caught up here in something, but hopefully a little late is better than never.
I appreciate you being
here. We're just talking about you, Rich.
My ears were burning.
Exactly. No worries.
I appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule to talk with us. And I want to lead off my first question with you today is, tell us about Sports Collectors Daily. When did you start it? Why? All the different backgrounds on it for it.
Sure. Well, later this month will be the site's 13th anniversary. As you kind of mentioned there, I was a sports anchor and reporter for local TV stations for over 20 years, but I was always involved in the hobby one way or the other, usually as a collector. And I just kind of felt that there was enough going on that a daily news-oriented type website might be worth trying. I didn't have any grandiose plans, but I saw that online was kind of really the future of publishing, and the existing franchises weren't doing a very good job of making that transition over to the digital side. And so websites, it just kind of seemed like we're an afterthought for them. And, sometimes the news you'd see would be several weeks old by the time they put it online. And with my background as somebody that worked in news, I just thought I could kind of maybe bring a different element, even if it wasn't a full-time venture. So I started writing and was pretty faithful about it, true to the name. We wanted to make sure it was a daily site, and wrote about a lot of different things. A lot of what was published early on was kind of minimalistic, almost notes and nuggets and little opinion pieces, but eventually it kind of kicked up to what it is now. Kind of took a couple of years to really get noticed, but then got some advertisers on board, which attracted some others. Content got a little better and deeper, and we're still here 13 years later writing about anything and everything, I guess, in the hobby.
Wow.
I got to
go ahead, Bob.
I got to say this. I thoroughly enjoy looking at your website and reading the different articles. And I personally enjoy all the hobby articles as far as collectors and so on and so forth. And I am amazed at what I like to refer to as the police blotter, because you inevitably find somebody who's done something bad in the hobby and they've been arrested, so on and so forth. So I'm always on the lookout for that kind of stuff. But you do a great job. You're a great, great job for the hobby, informing us of all the different issues, good and bad, that's going on.
Yeah, that's just it. Yeah. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
It is a mix of everything. I mean, it features about young collectors and guys that have been chasing things for years and fines and things like that. But there's also obviously fraud and things that we have to write about. And it's, unfortunately it's happened on a regular basis at times. We've kind of gone through a period recently where there hasn't been a lot of that kind of stuff, but it attracts everybody. It's a hobby with a lot of fun elements, but also, the money involved kind of tends to sometimes attract people that don't have the best intentions.
I got to say, Rich, you're quite eloquent for an online blogger. I'm impressed. So
comes with that broadcasting background, I guess. I had plenty of practice. I traveled every night for 3 minutes for about 25 years, so it kind of stuck with me, I guess.
I like it. Well, to reiterate what Bob said, I mean, I always have a tremendous amount of respect for, like what you and Bob do. You're carrying the hobby along and just informing the rest of us. I don't have the time or the bandwidth to dig in to some of the issues that you gentlemen cover, so I always just appreciate the people who are keeping the rest of us enlightened. Before you came on, I mean, we were emailing back and forth about, this latest, cancer that's hitting our beloved hobby. I mean, grading altered cards, in your opinion, what can be done to stop this?
Well, I go back probably over 40 years as a collector, and this type of thing has been happening as long as I've been in it. The difference now is that if someone altered a card in the 1970s or 80s, they made a few bucks. Somebody got mad.
Yeah.
Somebody took the card back to the dealer, hopefully, and got his money back, and there was maybe something mentioned in between collectors who just chatted on the phone and whatever. But now the hobby has grown to the point where those alterations obviously have a much bigger impact in terms of the amount of money that's spent on cards. It's
absolutely,
instead of a $2 or $3 or $5 or $10 increase, we're talking hundreds, if not thousands of dollars on certain cards. And so that's become why it's such a big deal. And obviously people can talk about it more because we have so many more instant means of communication, whether it's online forums, Facebook, Twitter, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a bigger deal. And I'm not minimizing by any stretch, but it's something that's been in the hobby for a long time, maybe not quite to this scale that we may be seeing here, but it's kind of an old problem rearing its ugly head again. And unfortunately, because of the money involved, it's become an issue that's probably in the law enforcement realm at this point.
Yeah, you're probably right. Bob and I obviously, focus a lot more on the football. Well, probably about 6 months ago, a 1935 Chickel Bolt Hosey in a PSA 8 came to auction, and it gets a lot of attention because it's the fifth Bolt Hosey in that grade and the first one to appear since I've been collecting. And it sold for about $51,000. What was it, Bob? Right in there?
Yeah.
Yeah,
About
$51,000. Well, about 2 months later, somebody, went through and checked, continuous certification numbers, around cards that looked to be trimmed. And lo and behold, this Bull Tosi was right smack in the middle of a 100-card submission where about 40% of the cards were rejected for being trimmed, and the rest of them were getting PSA 8s and 9s. So, I mean, pretty obvious somebody got a hold of this card, and the card looked okay to me, you know, online, and I'm like, man, I wouldn't spend that kind of money without holding it in my hand. You know, but after seeing it buried in a submission with that kind of rejection, I'm like, okay, I'm pretty damn sure this came under the knife of a card doctor, and you know, to get it in that grade.
Yeah, the natural reaction whenever you see a high grade vintage card, and by vintage I'm talking 60, 70, 80 year old cards, is that we all know that not many of them survived for obvious reasons in good shape. So there's a natural skepticism there. I don't think you can say, you know, every card that's high grade is bad. We all know that too. But yeah, the unfortunate thing that I think is going to, you know, and we're seeing this more now just in the last couple of days, how some of these issues that didn't necessarily have a size consistency, like 53 Parkhurst hockey or the Leaf football from the late 40s. Those
Absolutely.
Are targets for the trimmers because, you know, it's a little easier to trim off a little bit if the card consistency isn't there in terms of the size. So, and they know that, you know, the guys who are doctoring these cards have figured that out. And, you know, there is a variance from the grading companies, you know, what is okay.
Yep.
And they know what that is. And if they're trimming off 1/64 of an edge, it's probably going to get through. And that's unfortunate. You know, hopefully there's some kind of technology or something that we can rely on in the future to catch some of that. But I don't know. You know, it's difficult when the graders are trying to do their job and you hope they're doing it the right way. And yet, you know, there's still some leeway, some wiggle room in there in terms of what can be done to a card to catch it. So I, you know, it's the card doctors are getting better, obviously, in what they do. And, you know, we've seen, you know, the coloring of cards that, you know, it used to be automatic. Well, you know, you get a 1971 Topps back and it's rejected for being colored. Somebody colored the borders with a magic marker. You know, it's happened
yep.
to me. You know, you don't catch it. You know, you go through a stack of cards at a show and wow, this looks nice. And you send it in and it comes back. It was colored. So you get out your loop or your magnifier and you look at it. Oh, yep, there it is. You know, and so that's obviously something that's done by an amateur. But if you got somebody who's made a practice of this, you know, altering cards for years and years, you know, they've obviously through trial and error figured out what works and what doesn't. And so that's kind of what we're seeing, I think, in a lot of ways is every little loophole, every little question mark about, you know, how can I get this through is answered. And then you see the results when you get somebody that's able to check some of those identifying marks that are on the back, you know, that ensure us all that it's not two different cards. It's the
yep.
same card.
And it seems like the card doctors are ahead of the graders in technology. I mean, with power erasing, you know, recoloring, I mean, you know, resealing, Xerox copies, you know, printing off their own flips. You know, it's just, man, I mean, you know, left and right, you know, these fraudsters are coming at us. I mean, in so many different ways.
Yeah, it's a constant battle, I know. You know, nobody really, you know, has really good access to what happens behind those curtains at the grading companies. But, you know, it's something they're constantly worried about. You know, a few years ago, there was an issue with, like you mentioned, you know, some of the things that were coming out of Mexico and the
mm-hmm.
people that were doing this were actually coming up with their own holders and mimicking what the grading companies were doing. So, you know, it's easy to take shots at the grading company and we don't know, you know, exactly what's gone on here. And maybe they are at fault for much of this. We just don't know exactly what's happened yet. But we also should understand that, you know, like you mentioned, the people that are doing this stuff are getting better and better. And it takes everybody being on their game to stop it. And sometimes it's just,
yeah.
you know, the regulations are there in terms of what they're accepting and not accepting. And sometimes it still doesn't work because they're able to get through that.
Very
and you know, you brought up a good point, Rich. There are many high-grade cards that are graded that are legitimately high-grade cards. And at the same time, you know, what burns all of us is how many are actually bad. We really don't know. And, you know, what can be done in the future to try to prevent this stuff? Again, you know, that's the great debate right now. You know, what can be done to actually resolve the issue? And it just seems to be, to me, being an old collector and having, you know, very few graded cards in my collection and my run, I don't know what the attraction other than money becomes buying a card graded and keeping it in plastic, nor do I know what the attraction is. For example, putting together a large football set and have it completely graded. You know, the storage of it on top of everything, you know, it takes up a lot of space, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
I just don't understand the logic, but that's me. I mean, I'm a dinosaur in the hobby. I've been, you know, for years, so it really doesn't, you know, doesn't impact this issue other than I feel very bad for our hobby because it's really going to have an impact on it one way or the other. So that leads me to ask you, in your opinion, you know, I'll just throw it out. What do you think, or is there some sort of way that this can be stopped in the future, if at all? Or do we have to,
well,
do you think it's going to be inevitable?
Yeah, some of it, it's possible we may not be able to until after the fact. But I would suspect that you'll maybe see some technology come into play, especially with the attention that this is getting. And I just spoke with a major national media outlet today for a story that they're producing on this. Can't say any more than that right now, but it's definitely going to get
some more
attention.
More major than Gridiron Greats, Rich.
Yeah, it's a name I guarantee you've heard of. But, you know, the doctors are getting really good, obviously, as we talked about, very wise to those parameters. If the technology can come in, maybe that can prevent some more of this from happening. But I think, you know, the one thing that has to be done is we have to make people who are found to have an involvement in this feel unwelcome. You know, hopefully if there is a serious effort underway by law enforcement, that'll serve as a deterrent. Prison time tends to do that to people who otherwise are living a normal life because it's not pleasant. We chronicled that a couple of years ago when Bill Mastro went to prison, what the day is like in prison, and it's not fun. Even if you're even if you're supposedly a white collar criminal, it's not enjoyable. So hopefully that's a deterrent. It's kind of a long way off at this point, but we'll see what happens. It's going to be a long process, though. I think, you know, people want this thing to be over with, and they want people who are involved to be strung up by their toenails immediately, and that's just not the way it works. You know, it's going to be a long, I suspect anyway, it's going to be, we may see an indictment. It's possible that somebody gets indicted, but even that, as we've seen before, things happen to change what a person is charged with. Additional charges come in, cases reopen or the cases extended, and it can drag on and on. And once an indictment is made and questions continue to be asked, that tends to happen. So I would not expect this thing to wrap up quickly. I think we're going to be dealing with this for a long time. And in terms of, you know, how to stop it, you know, just more vigilance. I would strongly suggest that people who are really avid collectors of graded cards get a subscription to WorthPoint online. And every time they want to buy a card that's of any significant value, try and look on there and see if you can find one. And don't be afraid to ask questions. Go into a forum and where there are other collectors just like you that hang out, whether they're vintage football collectors or hockey or basketball, whatever, you know, and ask questions. Hey, what do you guys think about this card? It's better to lose a card because you wasted a little time, or not wasted a little time, but you took a little time, than it is to buy something and get it and then say, oh my gosh, why did I buy this? Now I just found out somebody told me or showed me that it's been trimmed or it's been colored or whatever. You know, it's, I'd rather own a card that's a little bit lower grade and know that it's good than own something that's high grade and wonder or have some knowledge that maybe it's not good.
Yeah.
That's
I get the feeling we'll see. Go ahead, Bob. We'll see Bill Mastro again someday. You know, he'll show up as a consignment director for someone. He'll get out of prison. He'll be all jacked up, you know, from pumping iron, have some cornrows. He'll change
He's out already, so he's
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
He'll found Islam, so he'll change his name. I mean, he'll we'll see a different, you know, renewed Bill Master, I think. But no, we tell our friends all the time. I mean, you know, we use the old Joe Orlando shtick as a, you know, it's a punching bag. You know, never get cheated. And, you know, along those lines, it's, you know, educate yourself. Know what a trimmed card looks like. But, I mean, think about how many people are out there buying cards, collecting, who don't have, who have no idea there are chat rooms available, you know, where you can bounce ideas off people. They're buying stuff in a vacuum. Like, oh, my gosh, PSA 8, 48 Leaf, you know, Bulldog Turner. That's amazing. You know, and the rest of us look at it and go, oh, my God, that's that same trimmed piece of garbage that's making the rounds. You know?
Well, the thing you always have to remember is that for most people, it's a hobby. It's a way to get away from the stresses of your job or your life. And
you
spend 2 hours. And the last thing you want to do is worry about the criminal who's done something to your card or faked a piece of memorabilia. You know, you just want to relax and escape and get into that mode where nothing else matters but putting your set together or finding a card that you need to complete a player collection or whatever, not to minimize it again, but it's just, you know, that's part of the problem with this is that, you know, some of the card doctors and fraudsters in the industry understand that that's the attitude of a lot of people. And so they know that effort maybe isn't always there and people aren't always paying attention. And so they're able to slip things through that shouldn't be. So, it's hard to read about it. It's hard to write about it because it's not fun. You know,
yep.
We're all collectors and we hate to see those things happen, but at the same time, it's just, as long as we, kind of share those ideas online and everybody can, kind of do the best they can to spread the word around, then hopefully, you know, the more people that understand it, the more people that read it, the more people that, discover what it's about, then maybe the better off we'll be and the less opportunity there'll be for things like that to happen going forward.
And we've all been in the hobby long enough. We've seen waves of these, you know, outrage come along where people have grabbed, you know, pitchforks and torches and, you know, stormed the castle. This one seems different. I don't know what it is, but this one, the outrage is just built where people are like, you know what, I'm pissed. I mean, you know, and you've got people like PSA and, you know, who are hunkering down, PWCC, you know, you just, I don't know, it seems different this time, you know, this go around.
Well, I think, you know, in the past, it's been a lot of isolated things involving memorabilia that maybe not as many people are all that interested in. And you know, shill bidding, obviously people, you know, were very upset when those allegations came through and because there were some people that got taken advantage of. But, you know, you're right in that I think it wasn't as widespread. Certainly people were affected. Multiple people that wound up paying more for an item than they should have. But this tends to affect more people because, you know, you're talking about a lot of different types of sets. We've seen we've seen T206 cards that are part of this, supposedly. We've seen 1940s Leaf. We've seen 1950s Hockey. We've seen modern cards, high-end rookie cards, autographed rookie cards. So it just cuts across such a wide spectrum of the hobby that I think you do have a lot of people that are more interested in this because, you know, it's potentially they've bought a card that isn't real, or they've dealt with a company that may be involved, or maybe they've run across one of these people at a show or online who's accused of doing this, at least accused by the online community. Nobody's been charged yet, but I think it's affecting a wider span of people. And even if you don't collect graded cards, you know, we know that there are probably cards out there that maybe somebody tried to alter and doctor and they got rejected. So now those are floating around as raw cards. And so I think it's just it's a wider net that's being cast with this whole thing. And I don't know where it's going to wind up, but I think when all is said and done, it's going to be much bigger than it is now. I'd be shocked if it wasn't. And I'd be surprised if this didn't wind up being probably the biggest modern era scandal, if there were scandals in the early days, but probably the biggest modern era issue that has ever affected the hobby.
good. Good.
I agree with that.
You mentioned a little bit ago. I mean, how do you stop it? And you said, technology, at the third party grader level. I mean, is that what the future of TPGs looks like to you? Is just, paying more money, but having more sophisticated things look at it, perhaps, computers that know exact dimensions and in scanning for, for color retouching, et cetera.
I would suspect so. I mean, I'm not sure, exactly what the process entails other than what we all read online of what a card goes through when it's graded and authenticated. But just that would be to me, maybe we take more of the human element out of it. I don't know. That'll be an issue for them to wrestle with, and they're probably already doing that. They've had to adjust their holders based on the fact that you've got people that have been trying to tamper with them, and in some cases they've succeeded. So that's why you've seen the changes in the holders, not just once, but two, three, four times over the last 25 years or so, you've seen changes. And so, it's all part of the evolution. They had to invent this stuff on the fly back in the early 90s. And like any other business, they've got to make changes. They've got to make adjustments based on what is happening from the element that wants to get around those things and try to take advantage of it. So that would just be my guess. Maybe there are some other things that they're doing or that, can be suggested from the hobby. The collectors are really the greatest focal point of all this anyway. That's this whole thing is unraveled because of what a bunch of guys on a forum did, and I shouldn't even say a bunch. It was just a couple of guys really at the beginning of this that kind of identified some of this stuff. So, the collectors are always the backbone of it, and collectors often can provide solutions and ideas for this thing. So maybe some of that comes from the hobby as a whole, but we'll have to see. I think it's got to change somehow to prevent this, because, even though we've seen a few names associated with this, it's not a stretch to say there are more people that are involved in it.
There are more. Yeah, absolutely right.
Exactly.
But I mean, if the price to grade a card goes up to, $7, but, you're 100% sure, or even more, and no special, maybe it's, $10 with no specials, what I mean? Suddenly you're going to see a lot of these lower, thinly collected sets, 1988 Topps football. I mean, just suddenly you can't afford to get it graded. I mean, you'll just see those go away.
Exactly.
Rich, getting back to collecting, do you have advice for beginning?
You broke up there a little bit, Bob. What was that?
I think he mentioned maybe some advice for beginning collectors.
Advice for beginning collectors.
What I would say, just what I always tell people, and I get emails all the time from guys who used to collect and they're wanting to get back into it, or they want to start a collection for their grandson or whatever. I always say, first of all, just buy what you like, and I know that's kind of common advice, but it's okay to seek advice with what you collect, but it's only fun if you enjoy it. Don't feel the peer pressure to buy something just because someone else does or somebody else tells you to collect that. If you like old football programs more than hot rookie cards, buy old football programs. Don't worry about what it's going to be worth in 20 years. That shouldn't really be a part of the conversation. Although if you do like the investment part of it, then learn all you can, before you throw some money in it. Just do reading, read a lot of stuff, whether it's our site or on, others, preferably read all of it, try to digest it. It's gotten to be a lot more complicated than it was, when we were all kids, but that's just part of educating yourself. But, and a lot of people say, you should limit yourself to one area of collecting so it doesn't get overwhelming. And I guess there's some truth to that, but I don't really subscribe to it myself. My collection is mostly vintage, but I have stuff from baseball, basketball, and football. I have a lot of card sets, but I also have some old programs from important games, World Series, All-Star games, Super Bowl, uncut sheets. I'm not an autograph collector, but that's what I've got on my wall. Unique things that are kind of historically interesting that just kind of catch my attention that are hard to pass up. The bottom line, if it makes you happy, that's what you should collect, because like I said before, it's It's supposed to be a hobby, something you enjoy doing when you're not working or sleeping or eating. So that's the best thing I can tell people is just to have a good time with it, whatever you do.
Rule one, collect what you love. Rule two, stay focused. Subset to that, see rule one, collect what you love.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
That's funny. I collect uncut sheets as well. I've told Bob this many times. It seems like it's the one thing that can't be doctored. I mean, I used to collect wax, unopened wax, and then I had a problem with that. At one point, we had two guests in a row that talked about the proliferation of just resealed wax, and one guy, you know, hypothesized that 50% of all wax, graded wax out there was resealed. And I'm like, oh my gosh. So I went to, I literally sold every, bit of wax I had. And I had some, BBCE, shrunk, wax boxes, and I sold them, and the guy I consigned them to called me and he goes, hey, Steve Hart just reached out to me and said these sealed wax boxes are fake. I'm like, what? There's people out there even taking wax boxes, made a sticker that looked like Steve Hart's, heat shrunk, the boxes and then slapped a sticker on it. I'm like, oh my gosh. All right. What do you do with a box that you think is, and I'm like, okay. And that was probably, about 20% of the stuff that I sold that I thought was legit ended up being faked legit. And it was very frustrating. It was the kick in the crotch.
Some people need to be told that there are a lot easier ways to make money.
Getting a job.
It seems an awfully complicated thing to, sometimes when people try to be clever criminals, it's just, wouldn't you rather take your time and do something that's a little more honest than the money would be easier and you'd be able to sleep at night?
But what do you collect? You've mentioned you've name dropped quite a few good sets. Plus you got my eyebrows up when you said you had some uncut sheets too. What do you collect? Most people go for the big stars in football like Steve Largent, but I'm just curious.
I've been at this a long time, so I was kind of traditional in that I wanted to collect the sets that I was too young to collect when I was growing up, and so my collection is mostly vintage baseball, football, and basketball cards, sets. Don't really have any like duplicate stuff, but I have three big bookshelves here full of complete sets here in my office, and that's kind of my main focus. I've kind of run out of room though. I'm in a sort of a confined 15x10 space, so there's not much room on the walls anymore. So I've kind of done what I did in terms of the sets I wanted to fill out. There's certainly more that I could like to have. I'd like to have a 52 Topps baseball set or a 51 Bowman football, and I guess I could maybe squeeze those in here somewhere, but it's getting a little tougher to do that. I've got, you mentioned uncut sheets, I've got some Kellogg's sheets, including some 1971 Kellogg's football, and your audience certainly knows how cool those are, but the bad thing is they've been sitting in a box here because I bought them and I have no place to put them. There's literally no room on the wall to hang them up, so and the thing to do is you want to get them framed. And I had one of those 1980 stop-and-go football sheets that you saw in the store when they had that 3D set. And I had an actual promotional cardboard poster that I just sent it in to have it framed. Not sent it in, but I took it over to a local store to have it framed a couple days ago. But so I'm hoping to find some space for that somewhere. It's not real, real big. The problem with the Kellogg sheets is that, man, they will crack on you. And I bought these sheets were beautiful. And all of a sudden I got them out the other day and one of them already had a big crack in the bottom of a baseball sheet from the 70s.
That's definitely the downfall of uncut sheets. I have about, six or seven of them framed that hang on my wall. And then I just run out of room and I probably got about 150 of them that are, laid up in a basement closet where I've, got a piece of MDF plywood laid down and then another one that lays on top of it and a weight, just keep them flat. So,
somebody needs to build it. They're probably out there. Somebody needs to build a display where you can kind of like thumb through them, where they're hanging up flat, straight, and then you just kind of take your finger and move through them and see them that way. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Like
you see
poster
a poster
display.
Shop. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. Well, very cool.
Well, Rich,
sounds like you. Oh, sorry. Take it away, Bob.
Okay, we're almost out of time, Rich. I truly appreciate you taking time out of your schedule for being on. And at the I wish you the best of luck continuing on with your Sports Collectors Daily. We all enjoy it. Keep up the great work.
Yeah.
I'm sure we'll run into each other at the National. I'll be set up there. I'll see you around there. And just to put you on the spot real quick, do you think there will be any, for lack of a better term, law enforcement issues at the National this year that we saw a few years back with those uniforms and jerseys that were apparently fake?
Yeah, and last year we had a dealer kicked off the floor for allegedly selling fake autographs, and so it would not surprise me. I don't have any inside knowledge, but it wouldn't surprise me. They tend to like to make a splash. We've seen the FBI and the postal inspector come into the floor and escort people off in front of a very large audience of collectors, and so it wouldn't surprise me. The FBI is there every year, even if they're not making any kind of arrest. They're there asking questions and talking to people and kind of keeping their eyes and pulse on the finger of what's going on here. So it wouldn't surprise me, but should be interesting. We'll see when it all shakes out. It's not that far away.
That's true. All right, Rich, thank you for being on. We appreciate it. And again, check out, if you don't, Sports Collectors Daily on the web. Great information, great articles. The voice for the hobby for information, news, and the happenings going on. Rich, thanks for being on.
And Rich.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
Thank you very much.
Good luck with the show. Appreciate it very much.
Okay.
Thanks for your time. Okay. Really appreciate it.
Rich Mueller, the editor and founder of Sports Collectors Daily. Joe, we almost got only about 2 minutes left. And we're going to go into our warning and wrap up. What do you think today?
What a nice guy. Every time we talk to a Pittsburgh Steeler fan and I just, and I can hear their knuckles dragging, it kind of, makes me shake my head at the hobby. And then, then Rich comes on and he's just on. It was very enjoyable.
Yeah, I truly enjoy Sports Collectors Daily. I know I've been my rapper collection was featured in a couple of articles over the years on that, and I think in another article I was quoted on something over the years. And I like I said to him, I truly enjoy reading the articles on the hobbyists that they interview and about collections and so on and so forth. And but unfortunately, the news lately has been pretty peppered with this dramatic issue with grading and the problems with the grading. And I don't know. It is a hobby. I don't know how it ever turned into, a debacle with regards to this graded cards, fake autographs, you name it. And I think it's very true. There are a lot of different ways to make money other than doing it by falsifying and ruining a hobby. And that's really what, in essence, what's happening. And it's not a good situation in any way, shape, or form, It's unbelievable, in my opinion. All right, we're down. Got about a minute left. And again, we'll be on with, we got a very special guest coming up, which we're working on time and date. And then the show after that, and I'm just going to announce it right now, will be our 100th podcast that we have done for Gridiron Greats, the podcast. And it's been an incredible ride.
There.
Interviewing many, many different people, many, many different areas of the hobby, just in great enjoyment. I thoroughly enjoy this very brief 60 minutes that we have talking about our hobby twice a month. It's just great.
Always.
And Joe, I appreciate you being my co-host. You are truly an expert in several different areas of our hobby, and you do have a very, very strong knowledge and presence in the hobby, and I appreciate you being my co-host at the same time.
Coming from you, Captain, that is an honor.
Check out our website, GridironGreatsMagazine.com. If you're not a subscriber, please subscribe, and our national issue will be coming out in a few weeks. And that's it for tonight. Thanks for listening.
Hey there, Sports History fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude, and I wanted to thank you for stopping by to listen to another episode here on the Sports History Network. Our podcasters are passionate about uncovering and sharing sports stories from yesteryear. And if you didn't know it already, we have over 30 shows across the network covering all sorts of sports history topics. In fact, here's a glimpse into one of our awesome podcasts here on the network.
Do you wish you knew more about the 100 seasons of the NFL? You're in luck because you found the Football History Dude podcast, where each episode is a journey back in time to learn about the rich history of the NFL. From the founding of the league in an auto showroom, all the way to what it is today, America's favorite sport and a behemoth of an industry. My name is Ernie Chapman. Football is my passion, and I want you to come along with me each week to explore the yesteryear of the gridiron. So hop on board my DeLorean, and let's get this baby up to 88 miles per hour.
How about that? I bet you're super hyped to go listen to that new podcast, right? Well, to learn about this show and all the other podcasts on the network, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Head over there today to find your next favorite sports history podcast.